I wanted to give somewhat of a talk slash seminar thing on Nursery Dave's forms. Tomorrow I'm going to be doing slideshows and stuff, so it'll be more interactive. But what I wanted to do was, first of all, ask a few devotees, how many devotees know of that there's more than a couple of forms of Lord Nrsimhadev, right? And which one, how do you say, are you attracted to the most? For me, it's the tearing Hiranyakashipu apart. But I could have been, since a child, we saw that painting, you know, so it's like etched in my brain. But you know, there's Lakshmi Narsimha, there's obviously Ugra Narsimha, there's Jwala Narsimha. So at the point when Lord Shiva came, because Lord Shiva's, you know, one of his main things is to come get the nectar, have darshan, like he tried to sneak in the Rasleela. He's constantly coming to have darshan of the Lord or participate somehow. So when Hiranyakashipu called on him, because Shiva gave him a boon, he said, I'll come when you call me. So in the midst of the battle, when Hiranyakashipu had his first vision that, I don't think I'm going to win this one, he called Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva came. And a lot of the texts, unfortunately, are lost, but it's written by some of the acharyas touch on it, like Shankara, Madhva, and Ramanuja, about how Lord Nrsimha fought with Shiva. And obviously they relished this, but then it was time to go. And Lord Nrsimha had enough, and Lord Shiva left, and then at this point he became Jwala Nrsimha. He was done dancing like a cat and mouse with Hiranyakashipu. At that point, then they say he burst, he had an effulgence of flames. And then he grabbed Hiranyakashipu, and there's a form, which we're not technically supposed to worship, where he's lifting him, so he has all his hands. He's digging into his legs, like crushing with his nails, and then he has one hand around his neck, and he's knocking his crown off, and he's pulling him up, and then the other two hands are getting ready to tear. This is the form of Jwala. I also liked this when I was young. Because again, like this aspect of removing envy and jealousy from her and Hiranyakashipu is what attracted me. Like, get rid of those things. So you have Ugra. Vira is fighting Nrsimha. So when, the act of actual, when they're in combat, there's a beautiful painting in Radhadesh, I'm sure you guys, is huge, by Dhriti and Ramdas, of Hiranyakashipu pouncing at Nrsimha. This is Vira fighting. That's also awesome because it shows Hiranyakashipu's fearlessness. The guy was, he was absolutely fearless, and it's hard for us to relate because we have fears. That guy saw Nrsimha when he came out of the pillar, Stanu, right? Like Mayapur Nrsimha, he pounced out and he stood there. And in a moment of like, I'm here. And then there's a form right after that where with his right eye he's searching Prahlad. Where is the boy? And then with his left eye he's searching Hiranyakashipu. So his right side he's happy, his left side he's very angry. There's a form, very, very like hardcore tantric form. And then the fight begins. And Hiranyakashipu was like, are you serious? You really? He was almost scared, but not. He was like, this is all you could come up with? It was the roar that scared him, not the form. And then he just pounced. The Sringadeva is pretty unbelievable to think about it. So then Vira, then they fought. Within that, then you have Ugra, Jwala. And then at the point, he didn't sit at the threshold. This is a misconception. There was no sitting down, or like all of a sudden a Vyasa song came, whoop, and he sat on it. He danced. The proper form is he was dancing and tearing Hiranyakashipu apart, and he was joyful. So, and then the 1 foot, Hiranyakashipu is on his lap with one leg raised, and then Garuda or Adisesh or the lotus is holding up his foot because that's their seva. So this form is very, very powerful because it's the moment when he freed Hiranyakashipu, and that painting Jadarani made of is awesome. Get rid of all of this stuff. So, and then there's the form thereafter, which is not the rage we understand, anger and disappointment, but this higher, when the demigods started applauding, oh, thank God, we were worried if you could pull this off, Bhagawan. He was so enraged that not one of them stepped in. The only one that stepped in was good old Narada Muni, Narada Rishi, because he can kind of get away with being anywhere at any time, and whether demon or he's neutral. So he comes and he's like, maybe it's not a good idea to do this to your kid or something. Maybe you should. And then, you know, they respect him because he's Narada. So the demigods, nobody stepped in to stop this man from torturing his child. Can you imagine? Whether we're old or young, man or woman, if we go on the street or if we walk by a window and we see some man or woman beating half to death or torturing a child, the first instinct is to be like, well, I have to save this kid. But the demigods were so in fear of this man, this awesome individual who was so potent, that they didn't even try. They were so scared that even when they, another form of Narsimha, some say he's called Darshan Narasimha, where he, when the demigods came up and they were like, are you going to take care of this, Hiranyakashipu? And he's like, yes. Well, how do we know you're going to be able to do it? Like, he's really powerful. Can you show us some proof? So there's a form in South India in this tunnel underneath this gigantic mountain. It's called Namakkal Narsimha. Great king had darshan of this form. Huge. He's like 10 foot tall in this cave. And Narsimha is holding his right hands and he's kind of glancing. He's like, with my nails. They wanted darshan. I'll kill him with my nails. And they were very confused. Obviously, Shiva and Brahma, they knew the reality of what that meant, but the sub-demigods and stuff were like, really? But what? Nails? So that form is very far out to see and worship. So because they didn't protect the boy, then he assumed a form of Jyoti Narsimha, emanating rays of such brightness and, you know, jyoti, brilliance, that the demigods could not see him. They had no right. And then so that form of Jyoti Narsimha, I've only seen one out of like 1,400 temples. And that's kind of on the outskirts of Ahobalam, like 20 kilometers outside. And then there's the famous, you know, Mahalakshmi, our mother, the goddess of fortune. Hey, Ma, please, can you go settle him down? He is yours, you're his. He'll listen to you. And then when he appeared, he didn't appear with her on him. Every other form he appears with her. This form he did not. He appeared exclusively for this boy. No distractions. So she went and he roared. And she said, this is not my, I don't know who this person is. And then it was subtle, it was humbling, but obviously Mahalakshmi doesn't need humbling. But she understood. This is their thing. He came for him. So then she told Prahlad, please, can you go see him? He'll only be pacified by you. And then Prahlad, being this beautiful, innocent boy, right? No envy, no jealousy. No, you know what, Narsimha? These guys really let me down. You know, I'm really disappointed and upset. Like something I would do or we would do. You know, go tattletale to mommy and daddy or the teacher. No, he walked up, incredible prayers, incredible. And then he said, can you forgive them? Forgive him? This is mind-boggling. I couldn't do that if my dad tortured me or my mom. You know, banish them to prison. So this form, which is not a Prahlad Narsimha, because there's in the science of the forms which the Lord taught us, you know, like the Shilpa Shastras, they're called, or the Agama Koshas. There is no form of Prahlad Narsimha, but there's the vision of Prahlad being embraced by Narsimha. Like, you know, imagine you take your child, or some people have pets, and you embrace. So some acharyas speak on this. Shankara, how he had a vision that Narsimha almost licked Prahlad, you know, because he was a lion licking his cub. Some other acharyas in the Madhva tradition speak about how Narsimha wept when the boy came to him, like because of what he had to endure. And then this aspect starts where it's Shanti Narsimha. So he calms down, and then the form of Girija Narsimha, where the Lord asks Garuda, his carrier, to come and carry him and Prahlad off. And then in the Puranas it's mentioned he visited Simhachalam, Mangalagiri, Dharampuri, four or five different places where he then taught Prahlad, or Prahlad taught him, vice versa, the process of yoga, bhakti yoga, and controlling the chittas, and you know, the senses. And we are not the mind and body and senses. The beginning stages of pure yoga, not all of this downward dog and whatever these poses are, you know. It's the real essence, the real deal. And then from that came Yoga Narsimha, where the Lord allowed the demigods to come close, where he sat in his yoga posture like this, and there's a yoga pata, a band, that he gave a boon to the demigods that they would reside in that band. So some ancient deities, 2,000 years plus, you'll see either the names or the symbols of the gods and goddesses are inscribed in that yoga band, where Narsimha is sitting very straight like this. And then you have Lakshmi Narsimha comes. So, or they call Mohaloha Narsimha, because Lakshmi was offended. Yeah, it's not so good to offend the ladies, Matajis. So even though she understood Prahlad Maharaj, he came for Prahlad, she was still offended. You didn't give me your audience. So when the Lord said, okay, now Lakshmi can come, she said, no. So this is also spoken about in the Nrisimha Upanishad. And so it's hard because a lot of the ancient texts of India have been destroyed because of different invasions. So I don't like to speculate, not even on 1%, or give my opinion. But some temples I have visited, which are chronologically documented as 1,000, 2,000 years old, say that Narsimha did tapasya to gain Lakshmi's favor, and then she obviously forgave him and, you know, 5 seconds, and then they united as Mohaloha Narsimha and then Pavana Narsimha. Then they were united and, like, married. They became a divine couple. And then with her there, then therefore that gives the blessing of Sri, so material things, whereas Narsimha doesn't offer that. He doesn't. So in India, everybody in India worships Narsimha, whether it's in the Madhva tradition, the Shankara, the Farsis, the Sikhs, there practically isn't a tradition in India that doesn't worship Narasimha as Bhakti Vinyasa. He removes my obstacles on the path of worshiping my Ishtadev, whether it's Ram, Balaji, Srinivas, Ranganathan, Udupi Krishna, whoever it is. He is the base, the foundation, the core. And he protects that. So that blew my mind when I realized that all four, you know, in India sometimes there's these fights, no Vishnu, no Shiva, no, he's greater, they're greater, she's greater. But when you mention Narasimha, oh, Narasimha, there's no question of who's this, who's that. Oh, Narasimha, he's, you know, Bhagawan. So, and then of course, different traditions like Madhva focused on the nails. That was his actual darshan, and the prayer that he came up with was focusing on the importance of Narasimha's nails, what they mean. Out with envy, out with jealousy, you know, out with I am the controller. These things Hiranyakashipu was pretty awesome at. And so one deity in around Udupi focuses on his nails, like he has huge nails. Like sometimes you see people, ladies get these big nails, huge. And I was shocked at first, like, what's up with these nails? But then a devotee of that tradition, that Vaishnava tradition, had this vision. Narasimha appeared, and he was a very puffed up man with wealth and prestige in his village. And nobody could defeat him or humble him because of his wealth and his connections. So Narasimha appeared to him, and with his nails, like, tore apart his ego and pride, and then he dedicated the rest of his life to Narasimha. Very unusual form. And then there's forms called Chintamani Narasimha. We all know about the Chintamani flower, right? It also gives you blessings, anything you wish. You can pluck a flower and another one will grow. So Narasimha's holding a Chintamani flower, and he's in this form of meditative yoga. Sometimes he'll have the strap. Sometimes he'll just be sitting like this with his hand hanging over. Then he's holding this flower. Or he'll go like this. Come to me, ask me what you will, and I will grant it. So this is like a very tribal form. The tribals in India, the people that make the clay pots and all these funny leaf plates and all these forest dwellers, the farmers, their god is Narasimha. But they're of a different nature. Like we have goodness, passion, and ignorance. So a lot of the farmer type are considered kind of verging on ignorancy, passionish, you know. So within their traditions, the visions they've had about Narasimha is this Chintamani. He is the giver, the flower, the seed, you know. And they need that. And also he was attacked. A lot of them were attacked and killed by tigers and lions. They live in the forest, in the huts. And one form, which blew my mind, I heard about it in the beginning. They said, oh, there's a Narasimha. He's a lion statue. And I was like, what? That's weird. Because in the beginning when I started, I was like, I know everything. I'm in ISKCON. I know everything. Nobody can teach me anything. And I'd read all Prabhupada's books, and then I stumbled into the Puranas, Upanishads, the Vedas. But Prabhupada's books were a lot, way more, they just made sense a lot more than a lot of these other, because of the colloquial English, the way they were translated. I related much more to them. And, you know, I had this idea, Ukra Narasimha, the painting, that's it, man. And then it blew my mind to see all these other, like I was saying earlier, abstract forms, or they worship a foot, Narasimha's foot. They worship a form where Narasimha became angry because there was no Lakshmi. Kirkari, Yoga, Boga, Lakshmi, Narasimha. And that they were determined to only have a yoga narsimha. The king had this vision in the Hoysala dynasty, very powerful kings. And the women of the village were missing Ma, Lakshmi. So they were coming and praying for Lakshmi. And then, you know, the men were praying to Bhagawan or Shema. And so one day the Brahmin had a vision, and Lakshmi, he came into the temple, and this woman was sitting on Narsimha's lap like a little child, and he ran and he fainted. So then he understood. So I was sitting there during Abhishek, and I didn't know any of this, and this guy is carrying this Lakshmi deity, and like just plops him right on Narsimha's lap, and he's got the yoga pata, and he's sitting in yoga, he's very old deity. And she fit perfect. So then they yoga bhoga Lakshmi Narsimha. Bhoga, completely without need, without want, totally calm, caring, giving, blessing. And with Ma there, sometimes his eyes are up in his head like a yogi, or his eyes are half shut. Most yoga Narsimhas. And then you have Rudra Narsimha, where Shiva's constant, you'll see most Nrisimhadeva deities have the third eye, because Rudra is the destroyer, right? Hari Hara. Prabhupada, in one, I forget, Maharaj maybe, you can help me. It was either in a class or he mentioned how Shiva is non different from Krishna, but he's different. Was that? Prabhupada mentioned that. Yeah, I can't remember if he spoke. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like when you mix milk together with acid, you get yogurt. So mm-hmm. Same way, Lord Shiva is the Krishna, but he's not Krishna.
Yeah, exactly. And Prabhupada, I heard him with my ears. I was like, wow. Because I always had this attraction to Lord Shiva, but not as a, you know, taking anything, but there's something about him because he's awesome, actually, Lord Shiva. And every temple I had visited, he was always there. There was, the main shrine was Narsimha, and then outside or near, there's a Shiva Lingam. And then at first, I was like, in ISKCON, he's a demigod, oh, don't worship Shiva. But then as I grew in my Nrisimha understanding and kept studying and understanding and meeting the saints and stuff, that aspect of Hari Hara, and then there was a story in the Puranas, the Vayu Purana, and I think the Brahmananda Purana, 3-4 different Puranas, how after Shiva, he killed Ganesh and he did tapasya. So in his tapasya, which is in a place called Madhavanti, that's not the original Sanskrit name from the Puranas, but it's a living, breathing place there. It's in between the ocean and a freshwater river. Shiva did tapasya. And in the western Ghats area in Karnataka, when he was doing tapasya, Narsimha manifests, Yoga Narsimha. And Shiva had his darshan, and the Lord said, I ask for anything. And Shiva said, you can't leave. That's my request. And the Lord said, you've always been with me. And then the third eye, the Rudra, he opened his third eye and he said, you are Rudra, the destroyer. So this for me shows, and then there's a lot of, sometimes there's a lot of made up stuff in India. I hate to be so blunt, but when you do research, you have to separate the facts from the speculation. And so often people don't understand this, that Shiva's constantly there. Like even when I would find my Nrisimhadeva, the Nrisimhadeva temples, I would also visit all the other temples in the local vicinity. So if there was a Krishna temple, a Narayan temple, a Vishnu temple, Shiva was always there. And it kind of blew my mind. So this Rudra Narsimha, where the third eye is actually open, because normally it's closed, that was awesome. And again, in a yoga form, sometimes he'll be in Kevala where he's holding the chakra, sitting there, and his hand's literally like this. But he's in this yogic trance, but his eyes are closed, but the third eye is open. So they'll call that Yoga Rudra Kevala Narsimha. And it was kind of hard for me. After a while, I became like, which one do I like? Which one do I like? What? I was overwhelmed. And then there's the caves where you'll see the eyes or just a mouth. Or one cave, you had to crawl under this huge boulder. And, you know, I can't do it anymore. I'm a little bit bigger than I used to be. And you get under there and you're just confronted with these huge eyes and this mouth with a tongue sticking out. Very tantric, Ugra Narsimha in Rajasthan. So this, in Jodhpur, one of the Maharajas about 700 years ago was infected by, they say a bhoot, a ghost, but that's not fact. It's more like a yaksha, yakshini, rakshasa. They come and disturb your mind. So they brought him to this Narsimha temple. Again, he was a very proud king. So the Swami that was there was an old dadu, like 90-year-old plus guy worshipping this Narsimha in this cave since he was young. So he had a cane, a danda. And they say that he became not possessed by Narsimha, but in some sort of way, and he took this danda. The king was speaking so much nonsense, like he was possessed, apparently, supposedly. And he took the danda, the Brahmin, and he started not beating, but pop, pop, like smacking. Like in India, sometimes the chokidars, they beat people, tap people. So when the king immediately like woke up from this, you know, whatever he was in, and then the king dedicated his life to this Narsimha. And he was the first king in the history of that dynasty to give up the kingdom and just became a... So this temple is very much before the new kings are kind of crowned. They have to go and do tapasya there for 1 month before their coronation. So that's an awesome form. And a lot of, you know... For me, what registers is, you know, ito nishima parato nishima, you know. Narsimha is here, Narsimha is there. Wherever I go, Narsimha is there. He's in my heart, outside as well. I surrender unto him. So at first I was like, this can't be. This is a little bit too far out for me. You know, this white guy from Florida who never... I just, like I said, Jadarani's photo was etched in my mind. Or Nuvrindavan Narsimha, where I grew up. And that deity, that's what I was used to. Yoga Narsimha, Rudra, Vira, Chintamani, Jyoti, Bhoga Yoga Narsimha, Kevala, all these other things were like wild. But they all attached to either some devotee's vision, whether Madhva, Ramanuja, Shankara, even in Bengal. There's hundreds of Narsimha temples. Hundreds. I've just started touching on Bengal. It's like the last state. Orissa, there's thousands. I can't even... There's one deity that's like 25 feet tall. Huge Yoga Narsimha deity. Hidden the southern Orissa, in the jungle. And in Orissa, like I said the earlier, they put a Narsimha Shalagram in Jagannath. So they worship him as Jagannath Narsimha, all the pundits there. And Madhva Acharya came and he established this principle that Narsimha is the god of Orissa. Back then, Madhva, I think, was 800, 900 years ago, maybe. I believe so. And he established this, and the pundits accepted this. It was like, yeah, it's a fact, Jagannath Narsimha. So they worship him every day, and there's this golden deity of Yoga Narsimha like this big. He came out for COVID. I don't know if any of you saw this online. They posted the first time in history he came outside the temple. All the Brahmins are there, like, and he's sitting in yoga. Like, and when I was doing my research there, this a couple months ago, Orissa is very unusual because there was some invasions by a certain particular Western group, and so they're a little bit off Westerners. Not racist, just a little bit skeptical. So luckily I have some good friends there, and we were going around and they wouldn't show you the deity. The deities are covered up. Because Orissa's iconography, Hindu iconography, is considered the most, in today's market, the most sought after, most valuable Hindu iconography. And the most valuable of that is Narsimha. So many Narsimha deities have been stolen. So you'll go to these temples and you're like, where's the deity? And there's just a mound of cloth that looks like it hasn't been changed for years. And it's like, you can just see little eyes. So this time, I was able to kind of convince them from the king of Orissa and his cousin, who's the first queen ever in Orissa. They're great Nrisingha devotees, so they kind of helped me. And some of these forms, thousands of years old, and they're metal. Normally we see stone is the traditional Morlava idol, but these ones are made thousands of years ago, and they're like solid gold. And they cover them, they'll paint them as well, so nobody steals them. And they worship him as Jagannath Narsimha, that's what they call him. Not Narsimha, Jagannath Narsimha, Narsimha Jagannath. So that's another form, and you'll see paintings where... And then lastly we have this beautiful Prahlad Narsimha, the photo on the in Simhachalam, which is also a unique form, and a form that doesn't exist part, you know, in the Shilpa Shastras or the Agama Kosha. It kind of came out from the dhyana or the vision or the desire of the devotees. And that's another aspect of how the Lord will manifest. He'll manifest, sometimes people will have dreams. Sometimes a great devotee will envision a very unique aspect or moment of the Lord. Like Prahlad, remember? When he got thrown off the mountain? It sounds weird to say that, like a kid gets chucked off a mountain. Boo! So he's falling, and then Vishnu caught him and brought him into this cave, which in India they call Simhachalam. That mountain there was the mountain that he was apparently, or a speck of the mountain he was thrown off. He brought him into this cave, and the Lord Vishnu was so, you know, hang on, my dear, I'm coming. Prahlad wasn't even asking. He was just so happy to have the Lord there. And Vishnu said, ask of me anything. And Prahlad said, I want to see you. I want to see the form in which you killed my uncle, Hiranyaksha. And then he praised his uncle, the greatest, the most powerful of all, Hiranyaksha. And I want to see the form in which you're going to kill my father. Prahlad wasn't astonished when he came. So Narsimha manifests as Varaha and Narsimha. And then Prahlad said, I want to keep this vision in my mind of these forms. And then this is when this dhyana of Varaha Narsimha came, which they cover him in chandan every year because they believe he'll just destroy the universe, whatever. That's a little speculative, but they cover him in the ball of chandan. And the form is very small. I've touched him. When I was young, like I was saying earlier, when I was young, I don't know if it was just getting the nectar or if it was being a little bit too wild. But if a temple door was open, I was in it. And I showed up there like a couple days before the chandan was taken off, and I had no idea about the history. And I was like 17, 16. The chokidar was asleep because it was just after lunch. Temple's closed. Brahmins were sleeping. And I was like, well, I'll just go in and have darshan. So I went in, and there's this Varaha Narsimha. I hugged him, I touched him, put my head on his feet. And he's very unusual. He has the tail of a lion, which at the end is like, you know. And then he has nails. But then the boar face with lion ears. Really unusual. And then the human legs and feet and, you know, torso. And... Then the Brahmins came in, and I don't know, they were probably cursing me. I didn't know the language, but I got the mercy and I was out of there. And then now I'm not banned from there, but only allowed to go when they're there. But a lot of temples, it was like that. I would just go in and, because they cover the form, and I'm like, I want to see the deity. And in the Hobalam, in the beginning, the forms were uncovered. Now you go there, and even though the Brahmins have known me since I was young, and they know I would go in the temples and do puja, because they wouldn't, because they were too lazy, or scared of the tigers or whatever. Now all the forms are covered, and they're like, no photos, just sit there and have darshan. You're not allowed to come any closer. It's interesting, but... so yeah, and then there's forms of the dhyana, the vision the devotee had. So those forms were then created, like Prahlad Narasimha and Simhachalam. So, and then, you know, they're not shastrically mentioned, but that's a... It's verified because of the love and devotion. He appeared that way. The Stapatis who carved him said he's not a form. There is no Prahlad Narasimha. Even in Mayapur, the Prahlad shouldn't be there. Even in Bangalore, ISKCON, there's a Prahlad. But, and the Stapatis will tell you no, but then at the same time they have to eat, they have a family. So some of them will break the traditions or they'll have a vision. Like the guy who did Mayapur Narasimha had a bit of a vision. He was doing heavy tapasya. The vision was he should not make this form. When they asked, because I have the original drawing, the sketching of that, from that Stapati, and he was told repeatedly, no, through his visions. But he went against it, and then, hence his house and everything burnt to the ground, supposedly, in the rain. And then in the end, the Lord said, then you have to worship me now. He wouldn't wait for the Prampratishtha, so the Prampratishtha was done months before he arrived in Mayapur. And the Lord said, then you have to worship me. It's far out. And so that form is, you know, very unique. And though we're not supposed to worship Stanu, because he appeared, and just for those who weren't here earlier, or no, I don't think I mentioned earlier. So I was talking to Atul in the car, and it was like, If someone's screaming in there, your brother, sister, your wife, your husband, your kid, help me, someone's trying to kill me, you're going as fast as you can. You're going to kick that door in. And once you're in, you're looking at what's going on here? I need to protect this person. That's Stanu. So imagine if you break the door down and someone's like, hey Prabhu, I need you to do this service for me tomorrow at like 6 p.m. And then you're trying to save your kid or your friend and someone's coming in like asking for something. So this form of Stanu is, that's why technically we don't worship him. And now he could have, they say he mellowed out and they talked about all that stuff, but that's another story. But he's there and he's the only one of that form. I've seen a few other abstract ones like, a pillar and then something on the pillar, but they say it's Danu Narasimha, so they worship the pillar. The pillar is feminine. It's called Stambhadri. So the pillar, there's a form where it's Stambhadri Narasimha. So the pillar gave birth to Narasimha. And then it's that's which is a very incredible, it was an incredible thing that once I learned that, I was like, and then they showed the Shastric references from the Shilpa Vedas and everything. And so sometimes you'll go and there's just a pillar in a cave, Narasimha. And so those forms, and I say, if you do have a vision or a thought, if you're so blessed, you know, sometimes the Lord will appear to some of us lucky ones, or whoever's lucky enough. I'm still waiting. But Lakshmi Narasimha sometimes, Yoga Narasimha. For me now, it's Yoga Narasimha. I've really gone off that. Narasimhadev, you know, heavy duty. And very much focused on this aspect of Yoga Narasimha because of the subtle meaning behind it, controlling the mind, body, and the senses, you know. Yeah, so that's kind of a broad view of his forms, and just in the first book I focused on a lot of his different forms, and the second book I'm working on is just Yoga Nirshama and the importance of and the relevance of that today, and then Prahlad being the kind of the first true yogi, and then the historical saints. Prabhupada brought those teachings, right? Bhaktivinoda, Bhaktisiddhanta, then Madhva Ramanuja, and then the contemporary devotees. I've seen devotees in my travels that worship Nirshrima like you can't imagine. And they're dedicated, never stopped through hell or high water, their conviction. But they have jobs, 9 to 5, they got a family, or they've had rough ups and downs, but they're just committed. To, you know, they have a good balance parallel in their spiritual and material existence. And so I'm focusing on that a lot. Or I've met yogis, yoginis that are very attracted to that form. They don't know why, but they're gravitating towards. I've met like Kali devotees, Shiva devotees, but then they just, next time I see them after a couple of years, they're like building a Nrsimha temple. Oh, Nrsimha told me, Kali told me. I must worship Nrsimha. Shiva told me. So that's a little bit of a, yeah, touching on Nrsimha and his forms. And does anyone have anything to add or any questions or want to share the form they like about Nrsimha?
Hey.
I can speak loud.
No, it's a mic.
It's a mic?
No, it's a mic. Wireless.
Oh, okay.
It's for recording.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you.
I guess you would have say a lot more than just the short. I was thinking, just like Lord Chaitanya has something what he desires, shak. You know, he desires to lose, eat food like shak. Is there anything missing in their lives, like specifically? Or is it like, you know...
Well, I know, but Nrsimha is in this Vaikuntha Bhav. So for me, I worship Panchatattva to rectify that. Vaikuntha Bhav means you can't give enough. You can't do enough. What do we have, really? In our pair, that's why there's in the Agama Kosha, the Pancharatra Pradipa, it talks about Manasa Puja a lot. Because within your mind, subtle platform, you can connect with the Lord and offer unlimited shower, you know, abhishekes of gold and unlimited flowers and heavenly delights. So, worshipping Mahaprabhu, Guru Guranga, Narsimha, that's what Prabhupada kind of said we should do. And worshipping Narsimha in the aspect of removing our obstacles, not asking for anything, is what I find that is more, I can't say what he likes because he's he, but from my experience and understanding and my own personal realizations, when you start getting into karmakanda or materialistic stuff, just like he came to help Hiranyakashipu remove some things, then he starts removing some things, obstacles from your path, especially if we're rooted in just, I want, I need, I should, you know, I'm it's material, it's not spiritually, you know, rooted. So does that make sense? Or were you more asking about food? Or like, was it, you said shock? What was it?
Yeah. Like, you're saying that just like, legitimately like shock.
Ah.
So what is, food?
Well, there's a panicum. Panicum. Panicum is, it's like syrup with, like maple syrup in a sense, with a lot of chili, lemon, pepper, and do they put mint? I can't remember. You can look it up. It's called panicum. You can make it yourself. It's very, so Narsimha in or they call it Jagri, Panakam. So there's a temple in Andhra. It's a volcano. It's an active volcano. Scientists have made that discovery. And this Panakam that they offer to Narsimha keeps the volcano from erupting. That's what these scientists discovered. And it's in the shape of an elephant. Very unique. It's also mentioned in the Puranas, this Panaka Narsimha, and it's a mouth. So you go in this cave on top of the mountain. The Pandavas were in this area. There's a temple that they say was worshipped by Yudhisthira Maharaj, 5,000 plus year old Lakshmi Narsimha at the base, and then you walk up the mountain, and there's Panaka Narsimha. So you go inside this cave, and there's just a mouth, like, ah. And they have this conch shell, and they dip it in this panakam, and there's billions of ants everywhere. They don't bite you. And then he tips it in the mouth, and it's like, boom, boom, boom. Sounds just like that. Boom, boom. And then it goes, and it spits half of it out back into the huge conch shell. And then that they give to you to drink as prasad. So Panaka Narsimha, that I know a lot of people, and in the south they offer him tamarind rice. Curd rice or tamarind rice? A lot of temples I've noticed throughout Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, they say that's Narsimha's favorite. But it's, if you taste it, it would be your favorite too because it's delicious. So, yeah, it makes sense. But yeah, Panaka, that temple I went in one day because the Brahmins have to go down to get the water and from the well. So he told me, sit there. Don't go in. So I went in immediately when he left. And it was funny. And the funny thing was, it was so dark. I was like feeling around on the cave wall, and then my left hand kind of slipped into the mouth, and people, I could totally speculate and make up something and say he bit me, which is total nonsense, but yeah, I got cut on the, it was very rigid, you know, and I was like, oh, and then I realized I'm like right there in front of the you know, the mouth, and it was wild. And that was the last time I did that. And then he came up, the Brahmin came up, and I was like sitting there, and he just looked at me and he knew. And I was like, I didn't do anything. And he just knew, it was funny. Yeah, he was a nice Brahmin, that guy. Narsimha Acharya, he died. And the thing is, he was huge, like 350 pounds, but tall, huge, tall guy. And he would fill up these big water buckets and carry two of them. He was so strong. From when he was 5 years old till his last breath, that was one of his, he was obviously the pujari, but he would walk down like 2,000 steps, fill those things up. Crazy, amazing devotion. So yeah. Oh, and there's Melkote. Maybe some of you have been to Melkote. Prahlad did tapasya in a cave and Narsimha appeared. Ramanuja, Madhva, Shankara, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited there. And they would go up on their knees, and there's thousands of steps. And the Melkote has champa trees. You know what champa flowers are. They're very, that are so wide. They say they're like 10,000 plus years old, the forestry department. And they give flowers all year round. So when you're walking up or going on your knees, which I did once and never again, the flowers are falling. So you're smelling, and there's a breeze, and they're all different colors, blue, pink, it's out of this world. And then you get to the top. I got to the top, and the Brahmin, again, was getting water from downstairs. So I went right in the inner sanctum and, like, massaged him. And they say he's Swayambhuv. He's self-manifested, right? But it's not. You look behind him, and through his heart, in the back of his heart, there's a shalagram they believe Prahlad Maharaj worshipped, it like sticking out. Then the stone becomes Swayambhuv, because it's shalagram in it. Then you can say he's Swayambhuv. Like Radharaman, there's a shalagram in his back. So yeah, that was amazing to witness that. And now as I've gotten older, I can't get away with much anymore. And times have changed in India, all the temples have cameras. Like, in Ahobalam, when they first put the doors on, because I was like, wait a minute, for so many years. Like, I would take friends or devotees, Swami, Radhanath Swami, so many people came. And I was just like, okay, let's, I would gently rip the doors off, and now you can't, but they put vault doors on and stuff. But it was so amazing to have that personal, you know, get the nectar type of thing. And it fueled the, and then I realized the real nectar is his people and their relationship to him. One guy in Tandanur, where Ramanuja was, they were going to kill him. You know, the Jains wanted to kill Ramanuja because he was converting so many people to Vaishnavism. So these kings were after him, and he hid in this place called Tandanur in the mountains. And there was an ancient Narsimha deity, or place where Prahlad also did tapasya, they believe. And there's a deity there, and there's a danda, small little danda. And one of the Jains who came to kill Ramanuja, his daughter came with him, and she became mentally, she went a bit bonkers, lost her mind. So the king was like, what am I got to kill this guy, my daughter, or she's going. So one of his Jain, like guru, had a dream and said, go speak to Ramanuja and ask him to offer prayers to Narsimha. Narsimha will fix her. So the Jain had to let go of his hatred, and he went and approached Ramanuja, who was living in the temple, and he brought his daughter before. The accounts are there, like the chronology, and she was shaking. And Ramanuja took the Narsimha danda and just tapped her on the head, and then she fell, like blacked out, and then woke up some days later, and she became one of the greatest disciples of Ramanuja and established many Narsimha temples, and her father also became a disciple. So they call him Narsimha danda. So the Brahmin there, his family has been worshipping that deity for 700 years without fail. And he was one of the most intense guys. I couldn't get away with anything. He was like, wow. I was trying to photograph that deity for 20 years. He refused. I tried everything. Bribes, breaking in at night. I even bought bolt cutters from America to like break the lock. I was like, this guy's not going to get away with it. It ain't happening. It was funny because I was so young. And then this last time, I brought him the book. Because I always wondered why he never let me take photos. So I brought him the first book. And he was crying. He said, finally, you've been telling me for 25 years you're doing this book. Now you can take a photo. You know, because I told you it took 18 years to do the first book, and then he got the book, 7 years later? So yeah, almost 25 years. And he totally opened up and beat us all with the danda, the camera crew and everything, like very far out form of yoga Narsimha. And Ramanuja did a lot of tapasya in this area, and yeah, far out. The devotees come, there's crystals everywhere, these white gems sticking out of the earth. It's a very rich deposit of minerals and stuff. So people come and they offer, you go down and they get these gems and they wash them in the kund and then they offer them to Narsimha. So you go in sometimes and there's just like, looks like diamonds everywhere and like multitudes of colors and so far out. Yeah, so Panaka. Panakam or Jaggery, they call it. So look that up. And someone can make it here, it's not difficult. Jai Shri Shri Panchatattva Bhagavan Ki Jai Shri Narsimha Chaitanya. So, thank you for your time. Anybody else have anything to add or questions or anything? You're all cool?
I may have one more question.
Okay, okay.
You kind of went into it. As you said that all this karma kanda you think Hadev doesn't like. What have you seen, or what do you think, or how is it that some grihastas worship, how can they worship Ugra Narsimha?
Well, I say they should worship Ugra Narsimha Dev. It's a misconception. There's nothing on any scripture. I know I've been studying this for more than half my life. The only thing it mentions that a grihastha, a woman, a man who's not a naishtika brahmachari, is in the shalagram kosha. So shalagram is non-different from God. It's him. When you have him, he's with you. He doesn't come and go. Like a deity, he can come and go. So Ugra Narsimha Shalagram should not even be looked upon by a woman or a person who's not a renunciate. Because for a renunciate, they're socially dead. They have nothing. They need nothing. So there's nothing to take, to remove as a spiritual impediment. So they're safe. That's the only thing. But in, as far as the forms of like an idol, wooden, stone, brass, whatever, bronze, clay, No, grihasthas should worship Ugra Narsimha because their problems they have are envy, jealousy, not the biological stuff, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. If you get rid of envy and jealousy, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending start to dwindle a lot more. It's because of envy and jealousy those things keep building. So Ugra Narsimha represents removing those. So as a grihastha, you're dealing with your, I know, I was married. You deal with your wife, you have to be humble. If you're not a humble man, good luck. You will be beat. Because that's the stri. Stri is pride. The man is ego. Ego can be humbled. Pride can never be humbled. So you cannot. That's why Gurukula is there, to humble the boy. To get him moving into the next phase. So you can't go with it, through marriage without humility. Or they will humble you. That's Sri. So, Ugra Narsimha, that form, if Prabhupada thought it was wrong, he would have told Jadarani, don't paint that. Prabhupada said, that's the one. That's the painting should be in every single home and every single temple. So, he encouraged, that's the form. So, I always tell people, I had this talk with Krishna Kshetra Maharaj and beautiful disciples some weeks ago, and that same question was asked about Ugra Narsimha, and all the hundreds and hundreds of temples I see in India, eight, like I'll show you tomorrow in the slideshow, 8-10 foot Ugra Narsimha deity is more fearful than you can fathom. They're worshipped by happy grihasthas, fat guys that are happy. The wife is happy, the kids are great, they're totally satisfied. Not one of them is suffering. Not one of them has some atrocity. All this, it's nonsense. It's not true. It's fiction. It's made up. It's lies. Srinadeva is not going to hurt you, take something from you because you want to worship him. Only at Ugra Narsimha Shalagram. That's where it's written. So I always tell people, you like Ugra Narsimha? Worship him. Trust me. He navigates you. And can protect you from a lot, but the problem is, do you want to be protected from that? Because we want to enjoy. We're humans. We want sense gratification. So it's not that he's going to, oh, you cannot serve your wife. This is all, no. But there's serving the grihastha ashram properly, and then there's serving it improperly for both male and female. And Ugra Narsimha, in my opinion and research, and I see that he helps. Even in ISKCON I've seen. But Ugra Narsimha, I've seen grihasthas. Oh, the Lord will accept. Okay. And he doesn't. Divorce, crazy kids, cancer. And then they finally give up this pride of I will worship Ugra Narsimha because I'm so great. And I'm telling you, it's black and white. It goes right back to normal. And like, I've seen it over and over. And for me, I never wanted shalagrams in my life. Many have come, thousands now. And if they're red, tawny, ugra, I of course I want to touch them and hold them. But that's my ego. Like, you know, why can't I? Why is there a limit to my love for God? But he tells us how he wants to be loved, Shravana Vishnu. He tells us very clearly, with love and devotion. Me wanting it is not love and devotion. That's me wanting it. So Ugra Narsimha, I always tell people, yeah, definitely. If a grihastha couple loves this form, get that painting. The painting photo is non-different from him, if you can't get a deity. And just, you know, worship that painting in your home. But for grihasthas, you guys need protection, let me tell you. So brahmacharis and all that stuff, you don't even really technically need deities and all that. You're sevas to the temple and the, you know, the ashram of the temple. But grihasthas need all that stuff. They need the home temple. They need that because they're out there working. They're out in the material energy, struggling and suffering. And then every single day, you're distracted. Oh, I want this pleasure. Oh, that looks good. They look good. You know, like, so you need Narsimha. So I think Prabhupada even told Brahmananda, Gargamuni, Guru Kripa, he gave Nuvrindavan an Ugra Narsingha deity that belongs to me now. It was given to me. If he wanted them to worship Lakshmi Narsimha, he would have given them Lakshmi Narsimha. He gave Ugra Narsimha. And even around ISKCON, before Srila Prabhupada physically, you know, took off, pretty much every ISKCON temple had a Narsingadev deity. He said he wanted it because at that time ISKCON was under attack in many temples, you know. People were getting hurt or whatever. And it happened. I think most had them, a few didn't. But then after Prabhupada left, you know, ISKCON was rebuilding and structuring, you know, and some of those deities ended up with grihasthas or, you know, back in temples or in rivers or something. So it's very important, if you can't connect with him at home as a grihastha, that if there's a photo at the temple, that painting or a deity or something, you know, it works, bhakti vinyasa. He will help you on your spiritual path. He's not going to take away your biological stuff, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, but ego, the pride of the Hiranyakashipu in us all, he'll definitely help you with that. And then he'll help you be guided to Prahlad Maharaj's teachings, right? Don't reject, but don't, what do they say? Hating is the opposite of love. Don't, oh, material nature, oh, God, grihasthas are so degenerates, are so lusty, they're so, if you're a brahmachari, tendency is like that, right? Or the grihasthas will criticize the brahmacharis. Oh, they're not working, they're a bunch of bums, you know. I've seen it, I travel all over. But no. Both ashrams support each other. So the grihasthas find inspiration from the brahmacharis and brahmanas, and the brahmacharis find inspiration from the grihasthas, because the grihastha ashram is actually more difficult, trust me. I mean, people here that are married know. You have to be a Brahmin. You have to, that teaching of brahmacharya or self-control or humility goes so deep, you know. And Narsingadeva will protect you in that. So, yes, Ugra Narsimha Ki Jai. I'm not telling you to get it, but if you're attracted, don't feel bad. Like, I know a lot of, when I was in Samachalam last year with Satchinandan Swami, and Krishna Chaitanya Maharaj was there, I had a bunch of deities. Like, I brought a few as well to show you guys if anybody wants some. I would travel with hundreds of deities, and then I would put them on these ancient deities. I would put them on the ancient deity and do yajnas and pujas and abhishekas. So they're very potent deities. So I had not that many Ugra Narsimhas, but I was in Samachalam and I was just watching every day. I do it sometimes. Who's going to, like, I wonder if it's the guys, the brahmacharis that are going to be Ugra Narsimha, or the grihasthas, or the women? And it was all women. The ones that took those deities was all women. And it was really cool, actually. I loved it. And some were married, two were not. Two were going to university and stuff. And I just said, be consistent. That's all. If you offer a leaf, incense, water, even if you're not home or if you're not clean, your mind is clean. You can offer in your mind. If today I can't do puja because of some reason, whatever, you can do puja in your mind. So you never miss. So we're blessed in this Vaishnav movement, or, you know, to have Narsimha. Anybody have anything else? I don't want to keep you guys too late because it's Friday. Anything? Hey.
You mentioned Varaha Narsingadev. Is there any more more specifics you can say about Varaha Narasimha deities?
Yeah, there's I made one of that form. Well, there's in Ahobalam there's Krodha Narasimha, so that's another name for Varaha Narasimha. That's very unusual, that form. But the original one is Simhachalam, where he's man, lion, boar. He's very abstract because he's so old. You see sometimes in India, even if those deities in Vrindavan or in Jaipur, Radha Govinda Gopinath, you can't even see the features or anything, you know, because they're worn down or whatever. So when I was there, I was very close to him, looking at his features, and yeah, it's a very unusual form, and you can buy those forms online, Varaha Narasimha, little fiberglass ones if you're interested in that. But for me, that form represents those two, Varaha and Narasimha. Worshipping Varaha is the significance of that is he stubbornness. Hiranyaksha was extremely stubborn, also envious and jealous. But Hiranyaksha took no advice, you know, egotistical. It's like the epitome of ego and narcissistic, you know, sociopathic behavior. More than Hiranyakashipu just hated Vishnu, but he wasn't like a sociopath wanting to kill everybody like Hiranyaksha did, you know. So Varaha removes this inward almost filth hidden within us. We're all capable of that, you know. So that worshipping Varaha and Narasimha, so a lot of people in India will have separate deities. They'll have a Varaha and a Narasimha. But worshipping it combined, you know, they're together, you get in one go, they say in India. So I always was gravitated to that form because of the significance of Varaha and Narasimha. And without Varaha, there's no Narasimha. Varaha made it to where Narasimha comes because he killed Hiranyakashipu's brother. So, yeah. Is that okay? I could go on forever, but... Anything from the ladies? Hey.
I just wanted to say thank you for your such lovely lecture, and I like the way how you are encouraging devotees to worship like Nisimhadev in the form of the picture, or like you said in like previous lecture, like in this small form. So sometimes when I'm with devotees, some devotees have this they're inspired to maybe worship this small deity of Nisimhadev, but they are afraid that they will do some offense, or if they don't have maybe initiation yet or things like this. So maybe
you can ask your, like, if you're aspiring for a guru, you know, what they think. Or see, a lot of the deities, even Prabhupada said the home deities don't have to be installed. They can be installed if you're strict. Like I say, if the woman doesn't have a job and she's home, then she can obviously look after the temple. But a lot of times home deities aren't installed. So even in India, the same thing goes. There's no pram pratishtha when a devotee brings an idol into his home. It's more of like a daily consistency. Because you can't go to the temple every day. I mean, you can, but it's difficult. Kids, family, work, job, responsibilities. Whereas at home, you got to get up, you got to shower, you got to cook breakfast, and then, oh, you cook breakfast? Hey, Bhagawan. To your idols or your pictures, hey, Bhagawan, this all comes from you. Thank you. Maybe you have to cook lunch and take it to work? Offer that too. Your kids have to go to school, your husband goes to school or whatever, partner? Hey, pray before we leave. So you see, you're bringing the Lord's subtle energy into the home, whether through photos or the vigraha. I'm a visual person, I'm an artist. So I want to touch and feel the idol. I want to bathe, clean, put little gold things. That's me. But some people love photos. Some people love thinking. I just think if you have a desire to worship the Lord, then why fear it? You know, there's nothing to fear. Or saying, I'm going to make an offense. Well, we're already offensive. We're making offenses every day to so many living entities and people and friends and family. But, you know, the Lord's not so black and white. You know, if we're doing puja on the altar, installed deities, yes, black and white. Pancharatra Pradeep, Vaikanasa Agamas, you can't go on there with dirty clothes. There's rules and regulations. But at home, inviting the Lord into your space through photos, through idols, I think it's extremely important to keep the relevancy of your sadhana potent. So why fear something? You don't have to fear God. He's not, I don't think he's wrathful, is he? There's no story in any of our shastras where he's wrathful against a devotee for, quite the opposite. Remember the Goswami, was it Rupa or Sanatan? There was a lady, she was going to the bathroom and then cooking for her Gopal deity or something. And he, you know, he's an advanced soul, like beyond comprehension. But he was like, hey, hang on a minute. You can't like go to the bathroom and then come out and not wash your hands and change and start cooking for the Lord. This was, he thought this, he didn't tell her this. That night, he had a dream. The Lord said, why are you getting involved? I love her, Seva, it's so pure. I mean, I'm speaking, not exact words, but, and then he understood, wow, God, you know, this is, yeah, I came into her home and I'm trying to, like, get involved in that person's relationship with the Lord. So I've been in thousands and thousands of homes, and like, I was in Kansas City installing two big deities for his day last week, and, you know, this guy's got, like, 500 deities, and he's got dogs and cats, and I'm just like, oh, God, like, touching my dhoti, you know, and like, I'm like, ah. So technically, a dog touches my dhoti or a cat, it's useless, whether it's silk or wool. I have to burn it. If I follow the agama, the Vaikanasa agamas, which the Pancharatra Pradeep is like 5% of. So I know both. So it's like, I'm sitting there thinking, oh, God, now I have to do puja? Like, But then there's also time, place, and circumstance. This guy's love for Narasimha is like no other. And it's so inspiring. And anyone I brought there that day from the ISKCON temple, His Holiness Dhanavir Swami has a beautiful temple there. This guy tried to connect with those people for years and they fobbed him off because he's a quirky guy. He's got tattoos. He's like, you know, even though he's a like double PhD, extremely unique, well, like intelligent man, they fobbed him up. So I invited them, come to his house. He named his home. He had the government change the address. It's called the home of Narasimha, Yoga Narasimha Ashram and Temple. So he's moving everything downstairs, making ashrams, and then the upstairs will be a temple. And I was like, you know, even the first time I visited, I was like, is it my ego? What am I got to stop. You know, I can't get involved in people's relationship with the Lord. And I've seen that time and time again in my years of, I see sometimes the ones that have, that seem externally the most, I don't know, unkempt and weird and strange are the most profound devotees I've met of Narasimha. I'm talking about like, externally, like they look filthy and dirty, like nail, like in India, some of these babas or pundits or some of these yoginis I've met, these maas and stuff. But they're, I immediately mentally slap myself, like, this is not my thing. My thing with Narasimha is my thing. If I want to be very strict and, oh, you know, every little detail, cleanliness, awesome. But these other people, Narasimha came into their life like your grandma, you know. And you said she wasn't like a devotee, but then this Narasimha thing was there. Addicted to Narasimha. She had faith and, you know. And maybe if she started worshiping a statue, she wouldn't know all these rules and regulations. So I find it starts, these people, it naturally happens. Like this guy, like I told you earlier, he stopped eating meat, he stopped doing drugs, drinking, smoking. And then, you know, the dogs will probably, they're very, very old, they're rescue dogs, so they'll probably pass away, and then he'll probably not want that responsibility. So then the house will become freed from that and clean, and then there, it'll keep building his purity and his bhav to nishma, you know, so. Yeah, that's interesting, you know, and some of that one temple, there's like so many temples, there's cockroaches, like big ones, huge, and they like jump on you and bite you. A woman's dream. So I was in this one temple, I brought a group of mostly Matajis from Malaysia, and they, you know, I didn't know, and we go in there, and yeah, the pujari brought a light to offer a big camphor lamp, you know, and they were probably sleeping, the cockroaches. So, next thing you know, it's like a swarm and like chaos and insanity. And I was just standing there because every single person left and I was just there with him and went and touched his feet, so it was perfect. But like, when I first saw that, I was like, what the heck is going on here? Cockroaches crawling on the deity? Rats? Are these people crazy? Thousands of years old? And then I'm thinking, and then, you know, because when you're young, you're a little bit fanatic and judgmental. And then as I got older, I was like, this isn't my, who am I? I'm coming here to see Narasimha. I'm coming here to meet his people. And then I'm coming to document, and so other people can meet his people and see him who can't come here. I'm not here to tell these people what they're doing right or wrong. And the one time, the moment I did that was when I started doing wrong. It kind of comes back on you, you know? Because I wasn't focusing on the thing, I was focused on the person. Who the hell do they think they are? Like, you know, they don't know how to worship Narasimha. So I wasn't looking at the behavior, I was looking at the person. And then I quickly realized I got reactions. Narasimha was like, pop, you know? Smash my head, smash my toes, smash my fingers. Subtle, the small things. And then I realized, God, like, this guy's so lucky to be here. Okay, the temple might not be what I think is clean, but this guy's here doing puja every day. I would, like, die to be able to do that. But here I am, some white guy in America, like, coming to judge. So, yeah, don't be negative and don't doubt. I always say, why do we doubt? Why do we, if we only doubted the stupid decisions we make in life with partners, with jobs, with bad things we eat, bad things we do say, if we were only so fearful with those things as we are of connecting with God and going full force with that love and that inherent thing within our soul, trying to connect with him, with them. So yeah, but if you're aspiring for a guru, definitely talk to him about it. And
I actually asked because of one of my friends who is like many years in Krishna consciousness but not initiated yet, so she had desire for a day.
So get her, be a friend and get her a day.
Okay.
That's like the best thing you can do, like in throw fuel on the fire of that bhakti. It's not a pair of shoes or some fancy dress, but it's something that'll actually give her real meaning and substance if she's into Narasimha and wants to worship Narasimha. I do that all the time. Even Krishna Kshetra Swami, he was like looking at this deity. He came like 10, 15 times over the festival. He kept picking up the same deity over and over. And I was like, yo, Maharaj, like, we were talking and then he didn't let go of the deity one day. He started walking off. And I was like, that deity's going with you. Because he loved the form of this gorgeous, it's a reproduction of a very old deity of yoga, Lakshmi Narasimha, where he's holding the club. Bala Narasimha, the protector. He's holding that mace. And he really loved that form. So I was like, and then, you know, yeah, so I think as devotees, we're supposed to be fearless, especially when it comes to our Krishna consciousness and our love, so, yeah. But if there is a guru there, you should always ask, you know, tell them your desire, And most, you know, gurus in ISKCON are pretty open-minded with stuff like that, especially if they see you're responsible and you're, you know, good person. You know, so, yeah, is that okay? Any other Matajis? Got to be at least one more. The Matajis haven't asked anything today. Hey.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you for the lecture.
Thank you.
I just shared something.
Yeah.
It was a period of my life that I loved very much, Narsingh Hadev, and he protected me so much. But there was a period of time that when was the appearance of Lord Narsingh Hadev, and I did a meditation drawing, and there was Bukhar Narsingh Hadev.
Ooh.
Yes, and the time that I drew him with a pencil, and it was his appearance, I just felt something happened, and I felt his presence, and I just fell down and said, please, can I draw you? And I felt so powerful and merciful, and I did it, and this was the best painting in my life. I still have it.
Where is it?
My home.
Bring it. We want to see it. That's amazing. That's called dhyana. So you have, you were inspired, you drew him, but see, the drawing of him is him. So a drawing, a painting, sculpture.
Yes,
so,
wow. He's so close to me, and he protected me many times.
Wow.
And something, I don't see difference between Lakshmi and poor. I see him.
Yeah.
I cannot explain.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, but you're more drawn to Ugra Narsimha, obviously. So it's nice to hear these things because a lot of devotees in my travels, they don't. I don't know. People are. I think devotees maybe were too shy or something. But I say, spill out your relationship or your experiences with the Lord, and it's inspiring for other devotees, you know.
And, when I draw this picture, and there was something going on, and I was moved out from that house, and I take it with him, and someone wanted to take it, the drawing, and he was going through the house, and I said, don't do that, you know what's my relationship with him, don't you? And he was, no, and at one moment he was, just take it.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing. You're lucky to have that. I would love to see the painting. Maybe tomorrow you can show a photo or something. That'd be cool. Thank you. Anybody else have any cool things like that? That gives me. That's like my food. I love that. Artists are lucky, you know. They're. They see, because on the scale of, you know, there's this whole Brahman Kshatriya Sudra, all this stuff, which is just more talking about nature and goodness, passion, and ignorance. So artists generally were classed in the more passionate Sudra realm because they're very passionate, creative, they're very thinkers, they're very mental, emotional. But in the Vedic arts, when you're drawing Bhagwan, you have to go into like a trance or very heavy tapasya. Like Narsimha, you can't just draw him or carve him. If you're married, then you have to become celibate for 3 months, 6 months. You can't live at home. You can't eat. You have to eat off the floor. Different things. And each form, whether it's Narsimha or Krishna, everybody has a different. But Narsimha is the most ferocious with these guidelines, you know? Because he's present in the creation of him, whether through drawing, painting, sculpting and stuff like that, he comes, he's there, his energy. So I'll tell you a quick story in Vrindavan. I don't know if many of you know, but there's so many Narsingha temples in Vrindavan, like in Vrindavan, not just, and then there's Govardhan, there's like 10 in Govardhan. Only place I haven't found one yet is Radhakund, but in Vrindavan, they reenact his thing every year. They wear a mask. And they become, the wearer of the mask becomes possessed by Narsimha. It's a subtle thing. And he has to fast for 6 weeks, be celibate. So there's this mask. I haven't really... No, I took one friend there because it's like... I don't want it to get too overrun. Mask is like this big, crazy, ferocious mask. Paper mache, so it's very light, you know, when you wear it. So every year they would celebrate on his day. They have a play in the streets where the whole city of Vrindavan comes. And you have Hiranyakashipu, you have Prahlad, and you have Narsinghadev. Breaks out of the pillar. When he breaks out of the pillar, the whole town grabs Hiranyakashipu and pushes him to Narsimha to try to get him killed. And then Hiranyakashipu is trying to escape from the people, and escape from Narsinghadev becomes this incredible pastime. And they still do it to this day in Vrindavan. And about 150 years ago, it's documented in the history of Vrindavan in the Mathura ledger or whatever it's called, chronology, history. One, the guy who was wearing the Narsimha mask killed Hiranyakashipu he tore his intestines out for real. He was possessed, you know. So they say. And they banned that performance for 150 years in Vrindavan. Only like, I think it was 68 or 78, they started it again. And nobody has been torn apart since. But they forbid that mask to ever be used. But you can go have darshan of that mask. And next to that mask is a really old, old Ugra Nishrama, like this big, that they found in the Yamuna. And the temple that does it now is near Sriji Jewelers. Most Matajis know where that is because it's got the best jewelry around. There's a Narsinghadev deity that looks like a crazy leopard lion thing, wild form, that they say Mahaprabhu visited. I don't know. So they perform it there, and you can see the mask. They're smaller, but it's intense because when he does get Hiranyakashipu, he's like hurting him. Like they really get into it. And then Ganesh is there. Because I told you he's one of Narsingha's devotees. Ganesh comes, Shiva comes. It's a far out thing. To see it, yeah, it's something else. So, yeah, that's a pretty cool story for you. In Kerala, they still enact it. In the dance is called, what is it, Kattikali? The traditional Kerala dance. It's wild. They have a mask that's, in the New York Metropolitan Museum, they say 2,500 years old. It was a full body mask with like... 6-8 arms, Narsinghadev mask, and now they have one that they say is 5,000 plus years, gold mask of like Jwala Narsinghadev with flames, and they put it on once a year, and only this one dude, his family, is able to dance with that mask, the blessing that the Lord gave his family. So it's pretty far out stuff. I mean, because Narsinghadev is Vaikuntha Bhava again, I worship Panchatattva to, you know, because Narsimha is Chaitanya. Chaitanya Narsimha, Narsimha Chaitanya, right? He manifested as him. So you have to, when you're dealing with installed deities or shalagrams, then you have to be practically intelligent and smart and not think that, well, he will accept my love. Imagine if you told, I always tell people, imagine if a man tells his wife, you just have to accept the love I'm going to give you. No. Doesn't work like that. Or vice versa. This is the way I would like to be cherished and appreciated and valued and loved and looked after. Right? We're very open about that. So God is too. He tells you exactly what he loves. And what to beware of. So to say that our sentiment and emotion eclipses that, then we create our own doom. So, but yeah, cool. So thank you again for sharing that beautiful Narsinghadev pastime. And if anyone else wants to share tomorrow or tonight, don't be shy. And tomorrow we're having a homa, and it's short, like 10-15 minutes. And I love when everyone's involved. So if you're clean, come. You don't have to, but if you want to offer the Havan Samagri, I brought a little bit from America. It's very sacred stuff. Just, you know, be showered. And then partake in the mantras. Everyone knows that mantra, Ugram Biramaham Vishnu. Awesome. When you chant that together, it's like, it makes your hair stand on end. It's like, whoa. This. And then there's Vadranakaya Vidmehe, that's the Nrsimha Gayatri. Tikshana Dangstraya Dimhitano Narasimha Prachodayat. And then there's Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Swaha. Like, and then Krom, which is the Bij mantra of Tantra and Nrsimha. There was guys in Orissa and different parts of India that would just chant that. Rom, 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 rom. It's very intense mantra. It connects with the direct energy of Nrsimha's potency and the power. So we'll be doing a couple things like that. And then maybe I'll do the Nrsimha Kavacha because I can do it really quick, like a couple minutes. And most of you maybe know it. And I would love you all to be involved, and then we'll have a cool slideshow. I'll show you some things that'll blow your mind, photos of the travels and the deities, and then so if you have time, I know it's the weekend and everybody wants to chillax, but if you got time, come over, and then I'll have a cool stall of those deities I told you that I brought everywhere with me. And Harinamamrita has probably one of the first that I brought, this teeny little guy. Because I wanted to make a teeny deity. And for those who didn't hear, because I was talking to the youth earlier, which was really fun. I wish they did a bit more talking, though. These small deities, they were kind of made for women, Grihastha women, and they would put them in their cholis where they would have a pocket over their heart. And the deity would go everywhere with them. So then whenever they arrive in a place, they would take out the deity and walk with him. Be like, here we are, bless this place, this space. So it's acknowledging that he's there with you always. So yeah, that deity came with me. It's a lot of temples. And your love has captured him. So, Jaya Nrsingadev, thank you guys so much. Have a beautiful night. Jaya Nrsingadev, Haribo, Haribo.